instead, we are talking about you.
Okay.
And really how you got into voiceover, having been an actor and a producer and various other things. How did you sort of segue into voiceovers?
Well, I actually got into voiceover very, very early on, and it dovetailed with me becoming an actor. When I was 15, I started taking my first acting classes outside of school, you know, going to a professional acting school. There was a kids program at Lee Strasberg Institute in Hollywood, and the classes were very expensive. So I had to earn some money to pay for those classes. And I knew about voiceover, I think, because of growing up in Los Angeles. It's a wonderful place to grow up as an actor because everybody is an actor or writer. And I always say if I grew up in, you know, Ohio, I'd have a farm and it would not seem extraordinary to me. So I needed to make some money and I thought I could maybe do voiceovers because I had an interesting voice. And my mom knew of a place where they did a lot of radio commercials. And I started calling this company and I called every Friday for about 5 weeks and I called the secretary and I said, "Hi, my name is Anna. I'm 15. I'm trying to earn money to pay for my acting classes and I think I could do voiceovers. Could I possibly talk to your boss?" And so finally she put me through to the boss, a guy named Chuck Blore, who's kind of a legend in the industry. And he very kindly said, "You know what? You do have a fun voice. Why don't you come in tomorrow?" So I did my very first radio spot when I was 15. I did it so I could play for my acting classes. And all of these years, no matter up and down with getting TV work or film work or not getting work or producing work and not getting work, plays that pay, that don't pay, the one thing that has always been a baseline for me is the voiceover work. Started out just in commercial, and then I started doing a lot of animation, and it has led to me being able to live a truly bi-coastal life. I've been splitting my time between L.A. and New York pretty evenly for the last 20 years at least. And it's because of the voiceover world. And it's also working on voiceovers has made me a better actor because it's made me value the importance of tone of voice, the importance of phrasing, the importance of really breaking down even just 3 or 4 lines into ideas. What are the different ideas, you know, like you do with Shakespeare? Oh, when there's a new idea in a sentence, you have the opportunity to have new music with it. So, for instance, I tell my students, say you have a film audition for one of those cop shows, and they say, the line is, "I found the gun in the park under the bench." And today, unfortunately, they'll say to you, "Don't do anything. Just be natural. Don't do anything." And even if you're auditioning for animation or commercials, they'll say, "Don't act. Don't do anything." It doesn't mean don't have a point of view. So there's 3 different ideas in that sentence. So pick one of those ideas that's the most interesting to you. So instead of saying, "I found the gun in the park under the bench," you can say, "I found the gun in the park under the bench." Like, it was so strange that it was under the bench. Or you could choose that you were afraid that you found the gun. "No, I found the gun." You know, you could say it that way. So suddenly something that's just a generic line without very much meaning, you're able to tell the story better. You're able to reveal a plot point better, and you're able to have more fun and put your signature as a creative storyteller, which is why we all get into acting, at least I did, because I had such a love for language and text, and I wanted to be able to illuminate and live in these words. So even if you're doing something as silly as the voice of a cat on a commercial or a cartoon, or you're playing a young mom telling her daughter about back-to-school things, there's a strong point of view, the way you can bring an authenticity to it through your voice. And suddenly it's engaging. So that's what I find very exciting about it. So it really does help my acting. I'll be working on a new play and I'll realize, oh my gosh, I've just said that entire scene like the same. Like my pace hasn't changed. My tone of voice is the same. That is so dull. And more important than dull, I'm missing opportunities to illuminate different ideas. Like, I don't say ever, like, hit this word or hit that thing, but it's about illuminating, just illuminating things. So it helps me a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. I didn't realize that you started so young.
Yeah.
So exciting. You're quite ballsy, aren't you? Do you think you have to be ballsy to be an actor?
I do. I think you have to be enthusiastic. And if you are creatively fed, then you have a lot of gas in your engine to do the business. So I always have been very blessed that I come from the joy of it. And as you get better at something, you get a sense of mastery and you get excited. So, if you really prepare for an audition, you feel confident going in there. You can't wait to show them what your Juliet's going to look like. You can't wait to show them what your cop number two is going to be. And so I'm a big proponent of enjoying the process of learning something, of getting good at practicing, at rehearsing. And again, the voiceover world is really helpful with that because it keeps you very fine-tuned in short little snippets. You know, it takes, months to really learn a dialect well. You know, you're going to be, rehearsing and practicing being an actor and an artist like your whole life. But you can do a commercial or an animated character and you can listen to what you've done instantly and say, I sound so sad and I should not do that. And you can make an adjustment instantly. So that's the other thing that I like about voiceovers. And that makes me enthusiastic and it gives me confidence to go out there and try it. And also, I think it's very hard. People say to me, it's hard to be an actor, or, I'm worried my daughter or son wants to be an actor. And I think it's an absolutely incredibly exciting, curious, ever-learning life if you are trained the right way in terms of being trained to become a craftsperson, storyteller, not just famous. I mean, you could get famous, great, or not, but the life of an actor is constantly evolving and expanding. You're just going to keep expanding out more and more and more and more how you can communicate with people and connect with people. And that's what's exciting about it.
Such a rich life. Not financially necessarily.
Not necessarily.
But in terms of the value that you get from life and meeting other people and the surprises and unexpected places you end up.
Yeah, unexpected places and travel and, working on just using your imagination. You know, like I was recently working on an animated character and I'm like, wait a minute. If you're living in an aquarium, what do you do? You have maybe one of those. Maybe there's a little castle you can swim in and out of. Maybe that, you can really use your imagination, and it's can be so playful. And again, when you're happy and you're playful, then it's not so hard to pick up the phone and do that. Also, you get a community of like-minded people. So when you do go to those auditions, or you work on a job that's disheartening, or, you only got one take, or a show closed really quickly, you can always go back to your community that's going to be supportive of you. And say, you tried that. Great, you tried it. And even the bad experiences teach you, even if it's just what not to do. But you tried it, and you'll learn. You get to travel. You get to research. Learning dialects, if you work on a dialect, it changes how you breathe. It changes how you sit. It changes how you present to the world. So, one things I'll do just for fun sometimes, I'll just go a whole week talking in a particular dialect. So that if I do have the opportunity to do it, even if it's just for British Airways, I've been speaking it as a British person at Starbucks for a week, and it's so fun. So you do have to
changes your whole worldview.
It does
it?
Change yes. your worldview, absolutely. Yeah.
So do you think there's a hierarchy in the industry with voiceover being more at the bottom? I ask that question because when I think about somebody like Jeremy Irons and his role as Scar, I think for me that's like one of his finest hours as an actor.
Absolutely.
And yet I'm wondering if in the real world if voiceovers are considered the second cousin or,
I think that used to be the case more.
Mm-hmm.
But with the proliferation of games and all that movies now, I mean, more people see games than see films, and certainly more than see plays. So, for instance, Mark Hamill, obviously of Star Wars fame, he is a huge giant in the voiceover industry. Hundreds of millions of people have seen his things. He can do 60 different characters, not voices, characters. He is a huge icon. And this is a side note, silly story. He and I both auditioned for the same part, for the part of a teenage boy. And neither one of us got it. But I thought, how fabulous is this? In what world would Luke Skywalker and I be reading for the same part.
Yeah.
This is great. So I think, yes, I think there used to be more of a stigma. But the truth is, I find now people really want to get into voiceover. They think it's very, very lucrative, which it can be. It can also be give you a good baseline. You know, I have a lot of students who, they don't have to bartend, they don't have to work at the Apple store, they don't have to be waiters, because they're making money in voiceovers, because now, particularly for new actors, so much of the voiceover world is non-union. So there's just a tremendous amount of work available, more than ever before, and you can just see it, like more commercials than ever. You're on YouTube, everyone has a commercial. You know, it's in a huge expanding global market. So I think there used to be a stigma, but with huge actors like Jeremy Irons or Robin Williams, not so much anymore. People want to do their animated movies. Whoopi Goldberg recently was talking about how she wants to do an animation film. And a lot of big stars do a lot of commercials too, because it's very lucrative. You know, you can spend an hour and a half and you can have a $200,000 contract.
Right.
You know.
And what about for women, gender-wise? Are there more roles for women in animation and voiceover now?
I don't know about more. One thing that's nice is 95% of boy voices, characters, male characters that are under 18 are done by women. So that's a whole extra thing that we get to do. And that's really exciting. So there's more work that way. But it's interesting, the gender roles, when you're playing a boy character, which I do a lot, you get to be the leader, you get to have the idea, you get to be in charge. You know, it's still, unfortunately, a lot of the girls are, you know, giggling and screaming a lot, which is its own joy. But I think it's more balanced. I think it's more balanced. Union rates are fantastic for everybody. In the non-union world, men get paid more money than women do, which is absurd. And unfortunate, but I don't even know why that is, but that still is the case. It's getting better,
right,
but that's still the case.
Something for us to change.
Exactly, something for us to change.
So what would you recommend then for young actors, let's say BFA actors just coming out in their early 20s? How do they get into voiceover then?
Well, it's actually pretty simple, because everyone has a computer now. The main problem I find with people starting voiceovers, they don't take literally half an hour a week for a month to research what the actual market is. And so you can sit down for half an hour a week and watch commercials very, very specifically and try to identify the type of commercial, give a title to the type of announcer, because you're never playing an announcer, you're always playing a person. And I try to equate it to, say you're a BFA student, you're a stage actor and you want to do comedies. So you could go to an agent and say, I have my BFA, I love comedies, I would love to do farces, I like broad things. That's one conversation. Somebody else goes in and says, well, I'd love to do comedies. You know, obviously Neil Simon is a classic. I can do Molière if you give me a couple days to work on the verse. I really like all the heightened things that go on with Shanley. Neil LaBute, obviously very dark but funny. That person knows the market. They know how to articulate the different types of comedies. And the same thing is true for commercials. The same thing is true for animation. And so if you just spend half an hour a week watching them specifically and writing down, trying to come up with a way to identify what is that person doing. The example I like to use is of a student was doing a very elegant, and I know you've heard this, elegant commercial. And I said, well, how would you describe what you're doing? And the guy said, I call that guy the I've earned it guy. So if you're that guy, it puts your tone of voice in a certain place. It puts your attitude in a certain place. It gives you an entire character by the timbre of your voice and the cadence in which you speak. And to be specific about that, because a lot of people can read copy and sound happy, fine. But they don't do that extra thing of getting specific with it. And they don't get specific with particular words. Like I always tell people, for instance, if you have an ad for weight loss and the copy is no carbs, no calories, no problem. So you can say it with a smile, which is fine. But also when you see a repeated word, like you do in Shakespeare, you see a repeated word and you go, oh, wait a minute, that word's repeated, so it's important. Maybe I won't give it the same thing, the same cadence, same emphasis. Mm-hmm. So then instead of saying it all the same, you can say, no calories, no carbs, no problem. So 50 actors read that line. One of them elongates that no problem. And what it does is it illuminates the importance of the story, and then you get cast in it. So all of your acting acumen that you've picked up all these years, don't think that that's separate from commercials. Don't think that's separate from narration. It's actually the exact same thing. And the more that you can apply your analytical skill set to the characters, you know, like the Stella Adler thing of where you are is who you are, is so great. Are you doing a mascara commercial in a bikini on the beach? Or have you just woken up after a very interesting evening somewhere? Or are you in your office? You know, you're going to have a different tone of voice and point of view depending on where you are. Yeah. So I would say research and then get into a really good class.
Right, so classes are important.
I think classes are essential because you learn so much from other people, hearing them get up and get down, reading with other people, and also it takes the stigma off of listening to your own voice. So many people say, oh, I hate the way I sound. Well, you have to really get over that.
Yeah.
So classes are important, and you don't have to be in class for years. Anybody that tells you, oh, you need to study for a year or two, they're just not honest. The truth is you can figure this out very quickly. You just have to be disciplined. I mean, what other business could you start by putting in an hour a week for 4 weeks? And you'll be pretty fluent in what the market is. No other business.
And then in a class and with a coach, they can also help you with all the technical sides of things as you're learning to record and send the work.
Exactly. And all of the... I'm glad you brought up the technical aspects. It used to be very challenging what you had to do technically and very expensive. If you wanted to record stuff from your house, you needed a $2,500 mic and you needed a compressor and you needed all these things. Now, most of the time, all you need is a $50 microphone and a free recording program you download into your computer, and you're ready to go. It's very accessible. I am not technically minded at all. You need a bit more if you're going to be doing books or long narrations, things like that. But for most of the work you're going to do, you do not need more than a $50 microphone and a quiet room. That's it.
How did you stumble into or plan on getting into being a coach from being... actor doing a lot of voiceovers.
Because I had so many people, a lot of my friends would come up to me and say, hey, how do I get started? How do you do that? And I ended up spending a lot of time, and I would get frustrated because people would say, you know, can we just have lunch and you just tell me all about voiceovers? I would say, okay, it's a bigger conversation than that, actually. I want to be focused, and I won't be able to tell you in an hour. And also, it's a very tactile thing. You have to practice it. And learn it a little bit on as you do it. So you can't do that over lunch. So that was one reason I just said, let me just teach a class, and I'll tell these 10 people that are asking me all at once, I'll tell them how to do it. And in teaching, it helped me clarify and define my own approach to things. So as all teachers tell you, you learn so much from your students. So from having to codify how to approach things, I use that every day in everything that I do in all areas, if a producer, actor, anything I do, I've learned from having to codify my approach to researching and fine-tuning my work as a voiceover actor. The same kind of disciplines apply. The other reason I started teaching, too, was I had different friends, because I taught for 10 years, and then I didn't, and then I just started again about 7-8 years ago now, is I had friends who'd be in class for 2 years, and I'd say, so what kind of characters can you do? And they'd go, I don't know. If you hand me a copy, I know what to do. And it made me so angry. I felt like they were being taken advantage of. And, you know, actors are very intelligent people. We're all CEOs of our own business. And often we just need someone to give us the guidance. It's almost like if you're trying to learn tennis by yourself, you can pick up a racket and you can try to hit the ball around. But if you have somebody say to you, you know, hold the racket this way, and this is the spot you're trying to hit, and, oh, move your arm all the way to the back. If you have someone give you a little bit of structure, then you can practice a lot on your own. So I was finding that a lot of teachers, I'm sorry to say, and a lot of these kind of institutional places where they teach voiceovers and cold reading and this and that, were kind of like these factories where people never left with a sense of their own mastery. And it really got me mad. So I said, that's it. Come to my class. In 4 weeks, you're going to be able to say what you can do. You're going to know where you fit in, and you're going to know how to expand it. Like an example is I had a student who's not an actor, he wanted to do something to get him out of his head. He's the first one to say, I'm an Asian cliche. I'm like a computer guy. I live in my head, and I want to be more expressive. So all he could do initially was he was about 25. I said, you sound like a 25-year-old who is not an actor. He was awkward at reading things. He had no communication skills at all. I said, but you really do sound like that 25-year-old who's not an actor, which is what they want a lot. So I said, you're going to be able to do solar panels, don't text and drive, all the save the planet guy stuff. And he's like, okay. So he did. And he actually recently booked a $25,000 job for saying, I'm hungry, twice. $25,000. And now he can do a lot. But he started out knowing this one thing he could do, because he could hear where it fit in the market. He could hear how he could already do that. And then once he mastered that, then he said, well, let me try to do the buddy at the bar. Let me try to do this. Let me try to do... And he's expanded out. And this has led to he's taking acting classes. Not because he wants to be an actor, but because he wants to have a rich life. Mm-hmm. He's taking improv classes now. He's taking a stand-up class. And it all started with this little voiceover world.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
So how do you recommend people get in touch with you? Through voiceforward.com?
Oh, well, actually, I need to be a little better about that and put a better email on there. Yes, they can check out my website, voiceforward.com, which explains a lot about me. And you can hear some demos I've done and everything. But people can email me at, especially your students, at annagardunio@gmail.com. Just send me an email and tell me you're a student of Helene's, and I'll be very happy to talk to you. Very happy.
That would be brilliant. So let's just finish on you telling us some of the challenges that your students might have faced. Is there something that's come up regularly that surprised you or was unexpected, or even with you maybe, you know, in your career, it's like, what's the hardest thing?
I think the hardest thing is, just like anything else, you can tend to get typecast. So you can get, you know, when I started, I was much younger, and I would do a lot of very energetic, high talking, people talk like this, like, oh wow, I love that new diet soda. I was kind of that girl. And as I became a better actor and things, I had more of a vocal range, and so you can get hit up against where people won't send you auditions for, like, the aspirational poetry read, for lack of a better term. You know, the type of thing, like a Maya Angelou type read, that they don't think you can do it. So rather than get upset or frustrated by that, you record it yourself and send it to them. And then they go, oh. People get frustrated where they send things out to agents and they don't hear back right away. And I say, well, the good news is there's 45 agents, and there's 600 jobs you can find today online yourself. So you have to be a little tenacious, and I think sometimes people, because it's emotional, you're putting yourself out there, so someone will say, I did 6 auditions, and I didn't hear anything back. And I say to them, all right, well, how long did those 6 auditions really take you? An hour. I go, all right, so you spent an hour. Okay, how hard was that really? You know, it's not like getting a bartending job. Or I always say what's really hard is, you know, putting on an outfit, blow-drying your hair, taking a cab, and trying to do a Shakespeare monologue in a big room with fluorescent lights with someone who doesn't like you the minute you walk in. That's really hard. Sending something to an agent is not hard. Sending in an audition is not hard. So that, I think, we become our own worst enemies. People can get disheartened because they think it's going to be a super quick fix, and it's not. You could get that very, very first job, or you could not get a job for a while. But while you're working at getting these jobs, you will become a better actor. And it's important to remember that's what you're trying to do, to become a better communicator, to become a better actor. And then you will make some money eventually if you're consistent with it. You have to be consistent over time. And people have either, this is true I think across the board, either craft problems or therapeutic problems. And therapeutic problems are the ones where you make 3 phone calls and you get disheartened. So be around people who say, oh, for God's sakes, make a 4th call. You know, so you do need a support system. But yeah, I've come across that where I get frustrated that people don't think I can do that. Or, you know, I've been in the business so long that sometimes people say, oh, we love Anna, but who do you have that's new? So painful. And I'm happy to say, oh, I know who's new. My students are new.
Mm.
So this is another thing that's a very positive thing about voiceover world. Unlike other areas of the industry, if you have a really solid demo, that's all you need to get started. You don't, you know, unlike doing a play, what other plays have you done? TV show, what other, how other guest, many guest stars have you done? What, you don't, you can say, I haven't done anything, but I've done this amazing demo, so people can see and hear what you can do, and you can get started. And the fact you're brand new to the business is actually a plus. If you're approaching it in a respectful, educated way, meaning you've taken a month or two to learn what the market is and to learn how you fit in the market. And then you can, you know, go straight ahead.
And you coach many types of demos, don't you?
Yeah. And again, it's all acting. It's all the same. So when you get started, you need to have separate demos. So there's, you know, because most demos are a minute to a minute, 15 seconds long. So you have a commercial demo or animation or narration or promo or podcast or erotica, whatever you want to do, because that's the industry standard. And you can usually get in any one demo 8 or 9 samples of different things. So sometimes I'll have a student who'll bring me a demo that's got 3 commercials, 2 cartoon voices, and a little bit of a narration. And it could be very accomplished, but when they hand in a demo like that that's a combo, it's not how the industry functions. So it's like giving someone a black and white headshot. Like, you might look great, but everyone needs a color headshot because that's just how the industry works.
Right.
So you need separate demos. But if you have a solid commercial demo, I always tell people, particularly for animation, animation voices are very much normal voices now. They're just a little bit heightened. So if you have a sexy car ad on a commercial demo, an agent might bring you in for that sexy snake. But it doesn't go the other way around. If you're doing a sexy snake, they can't imagine you doing sexy Lexus. I don't know why.
Yes, we have to help them be more imaginative, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very
well,
important.
It has been amazing talking to you, and I can't wait to do this again so we can hear about your producing side.
Thank you.
And your acting side.
Thank you. I love working with you, and I'm so glad that we met. And that's the other thing. I have met the most incredible people through this little side world, supposedly, of voiceover. Incredible people. Incredible talent. Dynamic, curious, interesting people. And that is the gift that comes from teaching and from being in this industry where you are not in an office for 10 years.
Yeah, and it's a cutthroat industry, so it's nice when there's that much positivity around.
Yeah, it can be very cutthroat. It can be. But all industry is.
Yeah.
You know, but actors are special. I'm going to leave you my favorite quote about actors that I heard Peter O'Toole say on Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose was talking to him about actors being special or what's different about them. And Peter O'Toole said, oh, Charles, actors are human beings, only more so. And that's what we are. We're more so. We do more than other people at times. And why not? You know, so get out there and do it.
Ana Garduño, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.